Holding on Jimmy Day's the last line of the narrow line. We learned in the Mishnah, we said a cheresh shoyt of a cotton are potter from re'ia. So we went through defining what a cheresh is exactly. Usually in Shas, a cheresh means somebody who can't hear and can't speak. But we said that in this particular case of Aliyah L'Rego, we're also excluding somebody who only can't hear or who only can't speak. They are also potter from re'ia, even though they're chayev in most of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So now let's go on to define the shoyt. Tana Rabbanan. A zehu shoyta. What is the definition of a shoyta? And not just here, but throughout Shas, when we talk about that a shoyta is potter from mitzvahs. So hayotzi yichidi balayla, when the person goes out alone at night. You have to remember, in those times, going out alone at night was dangerous. There could be shadim, there could be robbers, there weren't streetlights, so there could be holes in the ground that you might fall into, wild animals, etc. Now, the Gemara is going to say soon, we're going to talk about, is it only that? Wait. The second one is where he sleeps overnight in a cemetery. Same thing. It's not exactly a safe thing to do. And who rips his clothes. So now, what does that mean when we mention those three things? Itmar. So we have a machlokes amidoyim on that. Rav Huna Amar Abshi Yukulam Bavasachas. It means Rav Huna says he's a shoyta only if he does all these three things. If he just does one or two of them, then that's not enough to make him a shoyta for reasons that the Gemara is going to say in a second. Rav Yechanan Amar Afila Ba'achas Mehen. Rav Yechanan says no, even if he just does one single one of these things, but he does it repeatedly, is enough to make him consider a shoyta. So the Gemara says, Hechi Domi. Well, according to Rav Yechanan, what's the scenario? If we're talking about that he does them in an obviously crazy way, in other words, we're not just talking about a person who very calmly like gets up in the middle of the night and goes walking around the street. We're talking about that we can see he's doing it in a deranged way. Well, then I feel b'chodanami. Then shouldn't one of them be enough, according to Rav Huna, that is, who says that you have to do all of them. So why would Rav Huna say that you have to do all three? And if he's not doing it in an obviously deranged way, after the kulunami loy, then just because he's doing all these three things, why does that brand him as a shoyta? And the answer is, we are in fact talking about where he does them derech shtus, but if he does only one of them, or only two of them, that's not enough to brand him as a shoyta, even though he's doing it derech shtus, because there can be a reason for it. Because let's start with the one who sleeps overnight in the cemetery. If he's doing only that, even though he's doing it derech shtus in a deranged looking way, Emor, you could say that maybe he's doing it kadesh tishra olav ruach tumah hodkavid. He may be doing it in order that a ruach tumah, that a spirit of tumah, should rest on him. In fact, it says one of the types of magic that's also in the Torah is derech alamesim involves where a person does that. He goes hungry, he fasts for a while, he goes and stays overnight in the Beis HaKvaros, and he wants that the spirits of the dead should rest on him and speak to him. So it's actually also from the Torah. But the point is, if he does that, then he's a Baal Averis. But doing that alone, even though he's doing it derech shtus, does not make him a shoyta necessarily. And similarly, if he goes out alone at night and he's doing only that, even though he's doing it many times, Rav Huna would say, you could still say that maybe he was seized by gandripas. Which is, what's gandripas? Sarashi says two possibilities. One, he says his rebbeim explained that it means a sickness that's caused by worry, so like some kind of paranoia or something, which makes him therefore want to go and wander the streets. Rashi himself says that it means that he's overheated and he wants to go outside and get some fresh air. So just doing that, even though it's true that going out alone at night is dangerous, but if he's just doing that one thing, then we wouldn't say that it makes him a shoyta. In fact, Tosfos says you wouldn't even say that according to Rabbanan. Now we're talking about, you wouldn't even say, because he does one of those things repeatedly, we wouldn't even necessarily say that he's a shoita in that one. We might at most say that he's a shoita in that one particular thing. We wouldn't necessarily say that he's a shoita across the board. Anyway, Ram Kareas Susay, if he's ripping his clothes and he's doing only that, you could say, okay, he's having thoughts. It could mean, in other words, that he's deep in thought, and therefore in that he's tearing his clothes without realizing it. It could mean that he's having crazy thoughts, he's having paranoid thoughts or whatever, and therefore that's causing him to rip his clothes. But just that by itself wouldn't make him a shoyt of a chol dover. But, says Rav Huna, once he's doing all of them, then it's the equivalent of, suppose you have an animal. Now, we actually learned about this just a couple of days ago in Shlosha Parakim of Rambam. Suppose that you have an animal. We know that if an animal gores other animals three times, then it becomes a mord. So what if each time it's goring the same kind of animal, that doesn't necessarily make it a mord for all other animals. For whatever reason, that particular type of animal pushes its buttons and causes it to go wild. We wouldn't necessarily say that's mord for other kinds of animals. But if you have Kamisha Nogah Sher Hamur Gomel, suppose that an ox gores on one day an ox and on another day a donkey and on the third day a camel, we don't say it's moored for only those, Vanasa Moored Lakol. We say at that point, three different minim means that he's moored for all of them. So therefore, by the same token, Rav Huna is going to say, once he does these three things, then that's enough to brand him, so each one of them in isolation, we could say, like we just said in the Gemara, there could be a different reason that he's doing it that doesn't rise to the level of shtus. But now that we see that he's doing all three of them, then we would say that already makes him a chazaka, that he's a shoita in everything. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa, Ishmiya Leila Rav Huna Hodatanya, if Rav Huna had heard this that we learn in a Braisa, where it says, Ezehu Shoita, Zehama Abed, Kol Masha Noistim Loi, where the Braisa defines a Shoita as someone who destroys everything that he's given, if he had known of that Braisa, have a Hodarbe, then he would have changed his mind. Because we see in this Braisa that Hama Abed, Kol Masha Noistim Loi is the definition of Shoita. But the question is, what does that mean? What would Rav Huna have changed his mind on exactly? Ki have a hodabe mim kareach suse or who to have a hodabe? Do we mean that he would have only changed his mind regarding the ripping his clothes? In other words, he would have said that the three things that we said before, going out alone at night, sleeping overnight in the Beis HaKvaris, and ripping his clothes. Do we say that Rav Huna would have changed his mind and said that Makareyak Susay by itself is enough, and therefore we would say so would we say that Makareyak Susay is another form of that Ma'abed Komash Noistinloy is substitutes for Makareyak Susay? Would we say he would have changed his mind on that and say that losing or destroying everything that he's given is the third symptom of a shoita? So you'd still need the other two as well, but now instead of specifically makareyak susay, it would be more generally ma'am and mashinoistinloi. Oy dumami kulu have a hodder. Or maybe he would have changed his mind and said that you don't even need all of them. All you need is ma'am and mashinoistinloi, and that all by itself would be enough to brand him as a shoita. Because of this last braisa. So the Gemara says, Teiku, we can't be sure what we mean, what exactly Rav Huna would have changed his mind on. Now, the question becomes, do we mean these things that it's mentioning in the Gemara over here, do we mean that it has to be davka these things or other kinds of things as well? What if a person is not doing any of these things, but he's doing other obviously crazy things? The Rambam holds that the various things that we're mentioning in our Gemara over here are not exhaustive. Now, for example, if he's only ma'abed kol mashinoisim loy, then yeah, we're saying that's enough to brand him as a shoita. The halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, that even one thing, if he's doing it repeatedly, is enough to brand him as a shoita. However, It doesn't davka have to be the one thing ma'abed tomash noisimloy, says the Rambam, if he does other kinds of crazy things as well, where you can see that he's obviously mentally disturbed, then he would be considered a shoita, and then we're saying he's potter mikol mitzvah hamuras batorah, and it would mean also, for example, as far as, for example, he can't give a get to his wife because he has to be of sound mind in order to do that. He can't buy or say anything that he buys or sells when he's in such a condition is not considered a valid purchase or a valid sale because he's obviously not there mentally. That's according to the Rambam. On the other hand, you have the Rishonim who disagree with that. The Maharik brings in a tshuva that sometime the Maharik was an important late Rishon or early Achron in the 1400s. He wrote Shilas Tshuvas that are very highly used by the Poskim. So he describes how sometime before him there had been a case in the city of Würzburg in Germany where a person had given a get and there was question about whether he's mentally fit. And one of the Rishonim of that time, Rabbi Avigdor Cohen, sent a letter to the Maharam, probably Maharam Rutenberg, discussing whether in fact it was kosher or not, because he said since the person didn't exhibit the symptoms that we're saying over here in the Gemara, he didn't go out alone at night, he didn't stay overnight in the Beis HaKvaris, he didn't destroy everything that was given to him, etc., but he did other crazy things. Nevertheless, the Rabbi Avigdor Cohen said that he's not a shoita, unlike the Rambam's definition that because he does other things that show that he's crazy, then therefore we'd say he's crazy. So you have a machlokas Rishonim on that question of what exactly it has to be that a person is doing that would brand him as a shoita. So you actually have an interesting case that happened about 250 years ago or so that was called the Get of Cliver. Cliver, or Clivis, whatever, is a city in northern Germany. There was a Yid over there who had been Makadish, a woman, and then after that he started showing signs of some kind of mental issues. He was very paranoid. He's afraid that people are out to kill him. He has to run away to England, b'chola b'chola. So, of course, his father-in-law was not very happy about it, and they arranged a get. Now, or he himself, the father-in-law was not happy about it, but the son-in-law himself arranged a get. The father-in-law was concerned it might not be a valid get. If the son-in-law is crazy, if he's a shoita, like we're defining over here in the Gemara, then the get's no good, and his daughter is still an aguna. So, Akitsu, what wound up happening was that Abonim of Frankfurt took the view that the get is possible. They said they have different other pieces of evidence, different pieces of edus and whatever that show that the guy really is an out and out shoita and the get therefore is possible. Most of the other rabbonim of that time throughout Europe held that the get is kosher. It became a huge machlokas, which is called the machlokas of the get of Cliver. The upshot was not long after that, in the end, as I said, there was a whole machlokas over it for several years. Eventually, apparently, the guy got over his mental illness or whatever it was. There was actually an interesting postscript to it. Eventually, he wanted to remarry her, but the question was, does he need to remarry her, or was he married the whole time? After all, according to the Rabbanim of Frankfurt, it was a possible get to begin with. So he was actually, it says, brought that he was Mekadesher with the words, Harei at Oid Mekudeshesli. You're still Mekudesh to me. In this way, he's covering all his bases. Interesting historical sidelight of it, by the way, is during this, while this Machloikas was going on, the Rav of Frankfurt, of Abishol, passed away. One of the Dayanim of Frankfurt, named Rav Nosson Maz, who's actually a distant relative of mine, took over as interim Rav for a couple of years, but they were looking, so now they're looking for a new Rav. The rule was that everybody liked Rav Nosson a lot, but the rule was you can't have a person from the town itself be the Rav. You're afraid he might be biased towards some of the people or whatever. So they're looking around Europe for a new Rav. They decided at some point, the Parnassim decided though, they don't want to have any Rav who held that this get is kosher, because since their former Rav, Rav Abishol, had said that it's possible, so therefore, out of respect for him, they didn't want any Rav who said differently. So that disqualified most of the Rabbanim of that time. What happened? The Baal HaFla, Rav Pinchas, at that time, was the Rav of some town in Eastern Europe. he was about, he, that says, that there's a story is told, he was going to also write a tshuva saying that the get is kosher, like many of the other rabbanim of that time had done. But when he was writing the tshuva, his inkwell spilled and ruined what he was writing. He decided that it was min hashamayim, and therefore he shouldn't write the tshuva. So the upshot was, he was one of the few rabbanim of that time who had not written a tshuva, pro or con the thing, and therefore the parnassim of Frankfurt were willing to accept it, were able to accept him as Rav without going against that condition of theirs, and he ended up becoming the Rav of Frankfurt and serving there for 30 odd years. Anyway, that was all a story where, again, you have in that case, you look at it, this person didn't have the classic symptoms that we're mentioning here in the Gemara. He wasn't ripping his clothes, he wasn't going out alone at night, etc., but he was doing something else that was evidently crazy. And then saying that there are people out to get him and he's fearing for his life or whatever with no reason nowadays, and it probably diagnosed him that he has paranoia or something, and they'd give him some medication. But back then they didn't have any of that. But that was the machloikas came down to that. Do we say that the simonim over here in the Gemara, you have to have those simonim and only those that make him a shoita, or is it maybe that there are other things, like the Rambam says as well, that could make him a shoita? Okay. In any case, so that's basically the definition of a shoyter for our purposes. Next, the Mishnah had said the next ones who are potter from Aliyah L'Regel and from bringing the Korbanos are the tumtum v'andrugin eskula. So a tumtum is somebody who his genitals are covered over, so you can't tell clearly whether it's a male or a female. And andrugin is one who has the genitals of both, a male and a female. So we're saying that they're potter. So why? Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says Zechur, now the Pasuk says Yeroa called Zechurcha. All your males should appear in the Bais Mikdash three times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. So if it only said the word Zechur, that would mean Lahoitzias Anoshim. That alone would be excluding women, because Zechur obviously means males. When it says Zechurcha, when it says your males, so it means that the further miut, Lahoitzi Tumtum Vandroginus. So therefore, it comes to exclude a tumtum and an androgynous as well. And when it says kol zechurcha, when it says all of your children, all of your males, l'rabas naktanim, that's a ribui, and it comes to tell you to include children, that children above a certain age, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, are chayev in ri'iyah. So now let's analyze that. Omamar zechur l'hoitzias anoshim, we're saying that Yeroa calls Zechurcha, just the word Zechur by itself, without even the Cha, is already enough to exclude women. The question is, Ha Lamali Kra? Why do we even need a Pasuk for it? Mechtim Gitzas Eshesh Azman Gromahu. After all, Re'iyah and the Korbanos that go along with it are a Mitzvah Eshesh Azman Groma. And we know the general rule of Chol Mitzvah Eshesh Azman Groma Noshim Pturis. And as we know, women are generally potter from such mitzvahs. So automatically they'd be potter. The answer is Iftrich. Nevertheless, we still need the word Zechur to be Motzi then. Because otherwise, Tafadadach Amin and Nelech Re'iyah may Hakel. Otherwise, you would think to learn a Gzeda Shava on the word Re'iyah from Hakel. As we talked about yesterday, that there exists a Gzeda Shava that compares the mitzvah of Re'iyah Ba'azara and the mitzvah of the Korbanos together with it to the mitzvah of Hakel. And malahalam noshim chayavus. And when it comes to hakel, we know women are chayav because it says so explicitly in the pasuk hanoshim v'hanoshim v'hataf. So therefore, so based on that zera shava, you would think afkan noshim chayavus. You would think that maybe women are chayav in re'iyah as well. From mashmalan, therefore, we need the word zechur to tell us otherwise. Then the braisa continued omamar zechur chalahoti tumtum v'andreganus. That the word Zechurcha, the Langacha, teaches us to take out a Tumtum and an Androgynous. They're also potter from Re'iyah. So the question is, why do we need, so the question is, the Shlema Androgynous Itzrich. I understand why we need to exclude the Androgynous, because Sakadat Hamina Hoyova Ispait Sanzachus, because after all, the Androgynous does have male genitals, so therefore you would think Lachayev. You would think that therefore he should be chayev on the grounds of that, kamash malon, and therefore the pasuk is telling us he's potter because he's not exclusively a male, kamash malon deberi b'fnei atzmehu. He's really considered a separate kind of creature. He's considered almost like a third gender, neither male nor female, and therefore the word zechurcha therefore takes him out. Ela Tumtum, but the question is, on the Tumtum, what, Steikahu, a Tumtum is a suffix. After all, a Tumtum, when once, if you were to cut open if you were to cut open the covering over there, it could be a male or it could be a female. Well, me itzur kralam uti steika, do we actually need a pasuk to be memayik a suffix? Namely, now there's a few ways of looking at, so why not? I mean, after all, so Rashi explains the question is, given that it's a suffix, why would we think that he should be chayiv? Now, an interesting point in that is, what do you mean, why should he be chayiv? Suffix daraisa v'chumra. There's an interesting point that some Rishonim say that the whole concept that we say, sveika daraisa v'chumra, is itself drabanan. On a daraisa level, they say, I think the Rambam says this, the Meiri brings this, others, that on a daraisa level, the whole concept that sveika daraisa v'chumra is only drabanan. On a daraisa level, we would actually say that we're makel. So all Gemara would be an example of that. Given that a tumtum is a suffix, on a pure daraisa level, he's already potter. So therefore, there'd be no reason to mention to have a posuk to be memayatim, where anyway the suffix would be enough to be memayatim. Tosfos learned differently. Tosfos has a long discussion over here about the ins and outs of suffix. Marshaw explains that Tosfos may have had a girsa over here, not, we have in the Gemara over here, me itzurich kralam utis feka, do we need a posuk to be mayat the suffix? And according to Tosfos, they may have had the girsa without the word me, which means itzurich kralam utis feka, which means we need the posuk to tell us about a case where there's a suffix, so therefore, so we don't have it available to teach us about a tumtum as well. Or we would say only the tumtum, not the androgynous. Tosfos also brings up a point. In some places, the Gemara discusses when we say that there's a pasuk that's telling us about a suffix, and the Gemara will say that no, because kame shmaya galya, because we may have a suffix, but Hashem himself has no suffix about the status of this thing, and therefore you shouldn't need a pasuk for it. However, the Tosfos HaRosh explains that there's different kinds of suffix. There's a suffix where we physically don't know what the thing is, as in this case over here where the tumtum, he might be a male, we might be a female. We don't know until we actually cut open that covering. And then there's a different kind of suffix where we know what the facts are. The question is, what halachic status does it have? So over here, the Gemara is not saying that we don't need a pasuk for a suffix because kame shmaya galya, because that's not the kind of suffix we're dealing with over here. We're saying that we ourselves could find out that suffix once it's cut open, but until then, we ourselves don't know whether it's a male or a female. The question is, in other words, about the actual facts on the ground rather than on the question of what halachic status he has. Anyway, so the question is, so why do we need a pasuk to be memayit a suffix like that? So Abaya says the case we're talking about could be where you can see his basin, you can see his testicles sticking out on the outside. In other words, you have this covering for the tumtum. It's covering the actual erva itself, but we see there's something sticking out underneath it, and we can see and we can feel that those are basin. So we know obviously that's a male. We know that someplace under that covering there is a male organ. It's just covered. Nevertheless, we're still saying that he's still considered a tumtum. So even though it's not really a suffix anymore, we know for a fact that it's a zachar. But because it's covered over, therefore he still has the din of a tumtum, and therefore we're still saying he's potter from ri'iyah. Tosfos points out, by the way, now, why don't we say that, okay, he's a suffix, so what? Let him bring his korbanos, and let him bring his korbanos, and he can bring them out tonight. If he's a zocher, then he's required to bring them, and if he's a woman, then he would bring them in a dover, like we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, about a kohen doing that. And the answer is, Tosfos says that the problem then would come in as far as smicha. A man does smicha on his korbanos, according to most tanoim, a woman does not. So now, we would have that, and the problem is, you can't do smicha where you're not required to, because that would be avodah b'kodesh. Kodshim. That's you're doing unnecessary work with Kodshim. So therefore, you're taking away smicha for no good reason, and you can't do that. So therefore, you can't say that you should bring it as a possible choyv, a possible nadava. The child that we were talking about the other day, fine, he's a child, he doesn't have to do smicha anyway, so he can bring korbanos during Yom Tov, during Chol Hamoed rather, if he wants, and not do smicha on them. Similarly, a woman could bring voluntary korbanos, she doesn't do smicha on them anyway, but here, where it's a sophic, man or woman, then we can't do that. Okay. We said, Omar Mar kol zechurcha l'rabas zakanim. We said the kol zechurcha includes children. So the question is, what do you mean? Vatan Ratsnan chutz mecheres shoyte v'katan. Didn't we say in our Mishnah that cheres shoyte v'katan are all potter? Amar Abaye like Kasha, kan v'katan shehigia l'chinuch, kan v'katan shelo higia l'chinuch. The difference is the child of the age of chinuch already? For each different mitzvah, you have a different age of chinuch. In our Mishnah, we actually had a machlokes with Shammai v'Hillel at what point is of the age of chinuch for it. So once he reaches that point, then we're saying the pasuk is telling us that he's chayav. Before that point, then he's potter. The problem with that is cotton shi'vil chinuch d'rabbanan hi. The whole concept that a cotton is chayav in mitzvahs after the age of chinuch, that itself is only d'rabbanan. D'araisa, a child is not chayav in mitzvahs until they become bar or bas mitzvah, or technically until they develop shtei sairus. So how can you say that there's a pasuk telling us that a cotton of a certain age is chayav? So you're right. The Gemara says, "Eino chanami." You're right. Ukra smachta ba'alma. As a matter of fact, the pasuk is only an asmachta, and we're not actually learning from the words kol zechurcha that a child is chayav. The pasuk, we have the pasuk over there, as we've learned before, something that the Ritva says, and asmachta means that Hashem left that Hashem put those words in the pasuk as a hint to the Chachamim, should they decide to make such a takana, then they have a source, they have a support for it in the pasuk. And so here, it is a takana de rabbanan that children above the age of chinuch, achayev, we're not actually learning it from the word kol zechurcha, we're just using that as an asmachta. Well then, the question becomes ve'ela krolam ayosa. Well, what is the word kol coming to tell us then? If it's not actually, what's the actual drasha that we're learning from the word kol? The answer is l'chid acherim. It comes to teach us what acherim say, which usually acherim means your mayor. The tznan, or the tanya really, it's a braisa. Acherim oimrim hamakamet, a person who gathers together dog excrement. So he collects it with his hands, so therefore he's smelly and filthy. Rashi explains over here and in other places in Shas that they would use them for, so here Rashi explains that they would use them for tanning leather. They would use it for tanning high quality leather. They would soak it for a while in dog excrement. In a different Gemara in Ksubas, Rashi starts saying, I don't know really what they use it for. However, Rashi says over there, I've seen places where when they're laundering clothes, they soak it in that for a day or two. The idea is basically, I mean, it's pretty disgusting stuff, but it's got various enzymes and whatnot in it that would help break down, things. So therefore, in that sense, it's useful for tanning leather to break down some of the chemical compounds in there. And also for the same reason, for washing clothes, because it would help break down some types of tough stains. Anyway, if they're using dog excrement for that kind of purpose, somebody needs to collect it. The job of collecting it is called mekametz. So such a person, b'hametzaref nechoshes, also a person who refines copper at the mine. So in other words, they mine copper and then right there they refine it, which is also it's a very bad smelling kind of thing. So a person like that, his body and his clothes are soaked through with the smell of it. Bahabursi and a tanner who tans leather, so they also tannery smells really bad. So Acherim say that such people, Pturin, Minar Re'iyah, are potter from Re'iyah, Mishum Shenema, Kol Zechurcha, because the Pasuk says all your Zechur, so now this is what we're learning from the word Zechur, Misha Yochel Lalas in Kol Zechurcha, so it means who's Chayev in Re'iyah, only somebody who could go up together with all the other males, Yotzu Eila, Shein and Ruin Lalas, and Kol Zechurcha, as opposed to these people, they smell so bad, so nobody would want to join with them, so therefore they would not be going on Aliyah L'Regel together with everybody else, because everybody would give them a wide berth, and therefore, Achayim say, that's what we learn from the word Kol Zechurcha, that such people are potter. An interesting point that Mephoshim say is, it's not even so much for themselves, it's more the fact because other people are going to be staying away from them, it's going to make them feel bad, and therefore it's going to make them feel bad, and it's going to destroy their Simcha of Yom Tov, and therefore the Torah patters them from Aliyah L'Rekha. Now, an interesting point is that Rambam paskins that such people are not potter. They have to clean themselves up, they have to take a bath, and then do whatever it takes to remove the smell, and go on Aliyah L'Rekha. So how does that fit with the Or Gemara over here? So the Kesef Mishnah explains, okay, you know, we're saying over here, Acherim say that. Doesn't mean that evidently the other Chachamim disagree with them. Now, the Gemara is not saying what those Chachamim would say we learn from the word kol, but nevertheless, apparently the other Chachamim who disagree with Acherim have something else that they learn from the word kol. And therefore, so the Rambam is passing like the Chachamim against Acherim. And he brings from the Mahari Kurkus, who says a different point. He says that maybe even Acherim are saying only as long as these people are filthy and smelly are they potter from Aliyah L'Rekha. But if they clean themselves up, then sure, they'd be able to go together with everybody else. So therefore, the Rambam is saying they have an obligation to do that. They have to try to get themselves into a state where they're able to go with everybody else, and then they have to go. We said in the Mishnah, Noshim va'avodim she'enim meshachrorim fuller, we said women and slaves who are not freed, meaning avodim knanim, are potter from Aliyah L'Rekha. So the Gemara says, v'shlem and noshim kedam moron. Women, we understand why they're potter, we just said, because the word zechur. Ela avodim minolon. How do we know that avodim knanim are potter? Amar Rav Huna, Omar Krof, because the Pasuk says, el p'nei ha'odin Hashem, that you have to do Aliyah L'Rekha to the presence of the master Hashem. Which therefore means, Misha en lo'ela oden echad, so the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Rekha applies only to somebody who has only one master, Hashem. Yotzezeshi, yeshle oden echad, as opposed to an Eved Kani, has a different master, because he has a human master, who in turn Hashem is his master, so therefore the Eved Kani is potter. The Gemara says, Holam alikra, what do you need a posit to tell us that the Eved is potter? The general rule we know is that any mitzvah that women are chayav in, an eved knani is chayav in. And vice versa, any mitzvah that women are potter from, avodim are generally potter from them as well. And we know that by a zeta shava on the word loh, in connection with an eved and with a woman, by an eved, or rather, so by a shifcha, actually, by a shifcha knanis, it says the word, oy chufsha loy nitan loch. By a woman, it says, v'chosav loch sefer krisos. So we have a gzera shava. Now, we don't need a comparison of a shifcha knanis to a woman, because a shifcha knanis is obviously a woman, and therefore, of course, the same dinim that apply to women are going to apply to her. So therefore, we use it. It's almost like one of those things, im eina inyan lozeh, shneihu inyan lozeh, since we don't need it in connection with a shifcha knanis, then instead we apply it to the eved knani, and we say the rule is that whatever mitzvah that a woman is potter from, where it says on the woman the word loh, then the eved knani is also potter from. So therefore, automatically we would know that the eved knani is potter from re'iyah, since women are potter. Now, the obvious question is, then what was the Gemara even asking to begin with? That the Gemara was asking Minolon. So what do you mean Minolon? The Gemara should have right away said, we know, because they're potter from whatever mitzvahs women are potter from. So the Ramban says, the Minolon is not from the stomach of the Gemara. This is not the Chachmei HaGemara asking where we know it from. This Minolon was actually part of Rav Huna's statement. Very often we find that Amirayim will begin their statements, sometimes even Tanoim, with a question, like a rhetorical question, and then immediately proceed to answer it. So that would be how it is with Rav Huna over here. He says, Minolon omakra opnei odin Hashem. So now we're wondering, why does Rav Huna need to give us a limud when we know the general rule that avodim apotah from whatever mitzvahs we're not apotah from? The answer is, Amar Ravina, lo nitzrucha alonisha chetzi eved b'chetzi ben choru. Truth. But a regular Eved, we would know based on the fact that he's compared to a woman. But here we're talking about an Eved who's half free and half slave, whereas we learned on Beis Amud Aleph, we wouldn't know otherwise. After all, half of him is free. So maybe he should be Chayiv in Aliyah L'Rekha. So we need to be told that he is Potter. Now, we talked about on Beis Amud Aleph, a machloikas between the Rambam and most other Rishonim, which, now we learned over there that you have Mishnah Rishonah and Mishnah Achronah. There was the original din that a chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin could stay like that indefinitely, and he's going to work on alternate days for himself and for his master. And then we had Beis Shammai argued, what are you going to do as far as he can't get married, because he can't marry a shivcha and he can't marry a bas chorin, as we discussed at some length over there. So therefore, Beis Shammai says you have to force his master to free him, and the eved will owe him the remaining value. And Beis Hillel ended up agreeing with that. So Rashi and most other Rishonim hold that the Chetzi Eved, the Chetzi Ben Chorin is in fact Chayev, so not like Ravina then. Because we would say, because once he's going to be freed, he's going to be freed fairly soon, so therefore, so already now, even before he's freed, we would say that already he's chayev. So when the Mishnah had said, so in other words, we said at the beginning that according to Rashi, when it says akol chayov and mir'iya, and we said at the very beginning of the Gemara that it comes to include chetzi eved b'chetzi ben chorin, so Rashi and the Raivad and other Rishonim hold that is according to Mishnah Achrona, that's according to the final decision where Beis Hillel ended up agreeing with Beis Shammai. Then we say that such a person, even before the other half of him is freed, is already chayev on aliyah l'regel, because very soon he's going to be completely freed, and therefore he only has one other. Whereas when the Mishnah had said, Avodim, Shein, Mishchorim, and we're implying that they're potter, means that that would be according to Mishnah Rishonah. The Rambam, we said, learns it the other way around. The Rambam says that according to the Mishnah Rishonah, he would have been chayev because he could stay that way indefinitely, whereas according to Mishnah Achrona, he's potter until they actually accomplish freeing him. And we talk about there that the number of the Nosek Halem on the Rambam deal with how the Rambam understands that in the light of our Gemara over here. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, Dekanami, you can see, in fact, from the wording of the Mishnah, that it's talking about, like Ravina says, a chetzi eved b'chetzi ben chorin. Dekatoni, noshim va'avodim she'enim nishon chorin. After all, the Mishnah's phrasing is women and slaves who are not freed. So, my she'enim nishon chorin, so what's the phrase she'enim nishon chorin? Ilema she'enim nishon chorin klal, do we mean that they haven't been freed at all? Then it doesn't need to say that. Listen, avodim stomach, could just say avodim plain, and automatically avodim plain means avodim pnanim, and we would know it means they're potter. El alav she'enim nishon chorin legamri. So evidently, it must mean that it means enim nishon chorin, they're not completely freed. And that would therefore point us to the case of Chetzi Eved V'Chetzi Ben Chorin, and the Mishnah would be saying that they're potter. Again, according to Rashi and the Raivad, the Mishnah Rishonah would be that they're potter, and the Mishnah Achronah would be that they're chayev, according to the Rambam the other way around. Shmamina, so therefore that proves that when the Mishnah says the words Avodim She'en Mishnah Chorin, it's referring to a Chetzi Eved V'Chetzi Ben Chorin. Next, we said in the Mishnah, we said a person who is lame or blind or sick or old, and we learned previously actually that we had opinions that say even if he's only blind in one eye and even if he's only lame in one leg, we're gonna mention that soon again. So Tonan Abanim, we learn in a Braisa, when it says regolim, when it says sholish regolim, means, as we learned before, prat labale kabin, it comes to exclude people who have artificial legs or artificial feet. Such people are potter from aliyah l'regel, because they don't have their actual feet. Dover acher, another explanation, regolim prat l'chigur, or l'choylo, or l'sumo, or l'zakin, another explanation is that regolim, it comes to exclude a person who's lame or sick, meaning too sick to be able to walk, or a blind person, or a zokin, or an old person, and anybody else who can't go up on foot. Now, Rashi explains, why do we have to say dover acher on that second one? And the reason is, Rashi says, because previously on Daf Gimel, we said that actually, when we started saying that we're excluding Bale Kabin, people with artificial legs, that we're excluding them based on the word regolim, not really. The Gemara explained previously on Daf Gimel that those were actually excluding from the chiyuv of aliyah l'regel based on the word pa'omim, because we discussed over there that the word pa'omim also means feet. So now the Dover Acher is saying that we're not really learning Bale Kabin from Regolim, we're learning it from Pa'omim, and therefore Regolim comes to teach us people who need some other kind of support beside their feet. So not where they have two feet, but their feet are not completely functioning, and they need something else. So a Chigir, somebody who one or another leg is not working and he needs a cane to walk on. A choila who's too sick to be able to walk on his feet, a suma who needs a cane, a blind person needs a cane in order to be able to walk, And a zaken, an old person, same thing, needs a cane in order to walk. And then it would also mean anybody else who can't go up on foot. Tosfos, we said there on Daf Gimel, learned a little differently and said that what it means is that the limud from regolim was really only an asmachta. Anyway, so the question is, who else are we including by saying somebody who can't go up on foot? We seem to have covered all the various possibilities of people who can't walk. Omar Rava, so Rava says, lasuya mefangi. It comes to include people who are delicate. People who, they can't walk any place barefoot. Now, you're not allowed to go into the Harabayas wearing leather shoes, as we're going to learn now in the Gemara. So therefore, so if you have a person who won't go anywhere without leather shoes, then that's another kind of person, that's She'eni Yochel, Lalas Beraglav, and therefore he would be Potter from Aliyah Lerego. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Ki Savoyu Leirois Ponai, the Navi says to the Jewish people, when you come to see or to be seen in my presence, Mi Bikish Zos Miyenchem, who asked you for such a thing, Remois Chatzeroi, to trample on my courtyards. So in other words, to walk in the courtyards, in the Harabayas, with leather shoes, would be like to trample it, and you're not allowed to do that. So therefore, we're saying that such people are not our part of Malia Lerego, because unless they can learn to walk without leather shoes, then they can't go there. Tosfos points out that actually there's a different pasuk that we learn that you have to not wear leather shoes in the Hanabias. We learn that by the burning bush, by the snare, Moshe was told to take off his shoes because the place that you're standing is Admas Kodesh, is holy ground. And we learn from that, but the same that all the more so the Bais Hamikdash, which is holy forever. So Tosfos says, fine, but the Gemara over here is not really getting into the source of the din that you're not allowed to wear leather shoes in the Bais Hamikdash. Rather, the Gemara wants to bring a pasuk that involves the word re'iyah. The subject over here, after all, is a mitzvah of re'iyah. So therefore, the word kisavayu le'ra'is panai is very appropriate for that, and therefore the Gemara brings it. Now, by the way, the din of shoes on the Harabayas is similar to the din of shoes doing Avelos and Tisha B'Av and whatever, and Yom Kippur, where it's only leather shoes that are also. So when the Bais Hamikdash is rebuilt, Shivanim Hamehed of Yamenu, then the pashtos, a person will be allowed to wear shoes of other materials over there, just not leather. Okay. The Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Ha'oro v'ha'tomei p'turin min re'iyah. Here are some more people who are potter from re'iyah, but that were not mentioned in the Mishnah. Also an oral, a person who does not have a bris milah, and here you have, here and in other places in Shas, you have a machloikas, Rashi, and Tosfos, what we mean by that. Now, obviously, we know what an oral is, but in other words, why is he an oral? So Rashi explains, now, in other words, you can have, why doesn't a person have a bris milah? You can have a few possible reasons. It could be because he refuses it, he doesn't believe in the mitzvah. That would be called mumur la'arevus. Needless to say that such a person is considered an oral. Then you have a person who is not getting a bris milah, not because he doesn't believe in the mitzvah, but because he's afraid of the pain. And then you can have a person who is not getting a bris milah because he can't, because it's medically not able to, because he has brothers who had a bris milah and died from the blood loss, and the din is therefore that he can't have a milah until we know that he's going to be able to survive it. So now, Rashi holds that all three of those, even the last one, is considered an oral for purposes that we're talking about here and in other places in Halakha. On the other hand, Tosfos discusses here and in some other places in Shas that maybe not necessarily. Maybe that last one, the one who's a mumer la'arelos, no question about it, he's an oral. The one who is not, on the other hand, Tosfos says the one who is not getting it because he can't, because his brother has died, Machmas Mila, maybe Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam, says in some places, and here and in other places in Shas, maybe he's not considered an oral for these purposes, because he would like to have a bris mila. It's only that the halacha and then medical science are telling him not to. So therefore, so he's an onus. So an onus wouldn't necessarily be excluded under the category of oral. What would be excluded would be the second case, where he could get a bris mila, but he's afraid of the pain, and therefore he doesn't want to. So therefore we say, look, until you do, then you're considered an oral, and among other things, you can't come to the Bais Hamikdash, and you can't send korbanos to the Bais Hamikdash. Okay, so we have machlokes, what's counted under the definition of an oral. Anyway, we're saying, ha'oro va'atomic turim in a re'iyah, they are potter from Re'iyah. Obviously, they can't come into the Azara, but we mean, well, we're going to ask soon how we know that the Oro can't. The Tomei obviously can't come into the Azara, but the point is they don't even need to send their Korbanos with a Shliach. Tosfos actually points out that we learned in Moed Katan, we had a discussion over there about that a Tomei is, that a Tomei is able to send Korbanos to the Bais HaMikdash. So Tosfos explains that we're talking about over there a Metzoda, let's say, he was healed from his Tzoras, so now he goes through his whole procedure over there, and then he needs to bring his Korbanos. But let's say by the time it's time for him to bring his Korbanos, he became a Metzoda again, so then we're going to allow him to, send his Korbanos. But not Nejorim and Nejava, but Nejorim and Nejava, so actually Tosfos says that what it means is, that in a case like that, he can't bring the korban that he's chayev for his first tzaras, because now he's a second time mitzvah, so therefore he doesn't send his korbanos. But he should be able to send nedarim and nedavos, yeah, but here we're not talking nedarim and nedavos, here we're talking about a korban that he's required to bring, so therefore we would say that a tomei does not have to send it to the Bais HaMikdash. If he wanted to send it as an nedavos, then according to Tosfos, he would be allowed to. But different other Rishonim talk about different possibilities. Maybe we're talking about different kinds of Tmeim. Maybe some kinds of Tmeim can, such as a Tomei Mess, can send their Korbanos and other kinds not. Anyway, so the question is, the Shlema Tomei, I understand why the Tomei does not have to send his Korbanos, because he can't come into the Azara. The Pasuk says, Uvasa Shama Vahavesim Shama. The Pasuk says you should come there to the Bais HaMikdash and you should bring there your Korbanos, implying Kol Sheyeshne Bebia Yeshne Bahava. So anyone who can come into the Bais HaMikdash is able to bring and send Korbanos and is required to send Korbanos that he's obligated in. Kol Sheyeshne Bebia Eine Bahava. If he can't come in, he's not required to send. So that takes out the Tomei. Ela Oro Manolon. Why should the Oro, we're not talking about a Kohen who can't do the Avodah, we're talking about Yisrael, why should an Oro not be able to go into the Azara and not be able to bring his Korbanos? The answer is, Homani Rav Akiva, the answer is that this Braisa that was saying that the Oro is Potter from Aliyah the Regal and from bringing the Korbanos would be, according to Rav Akiva, Demarbi La Oro Katame. Rav Akiva learns from a Ribui in the Pasuk that an Oro is just like a Tomei. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Akiva Omer, when the Pasuk says ish, the Pasuk says regarding Koyanim eating Truma, and it starts and introduces it by saying the word ish, and then it talks about, among other things, it talks about a Koyan whose Tomei is not allowed to eat Truma. So Rabbi Akiva says the words ish, l'rabba says a oral, it comes to include an oral that he is like a Tomei, and therefore if he's a Koyan, he can't eat Truma. So therefore, said Rabbi Akiva, is going to say that by the same token, since a Tomei cannot come into the Azara, and therefore is potter from sending his Ola Sri'iyah and other Yom Tov Korbanos, therefore so is a, therefore an Oral is in the same category as well. Tosfos points out, now on Amud Aleph, we talk about the Trumtum and the Adragonus. Now, on the face of it, a Trumtum, we said that his Gid is covered up, even if we said his Beitzim are sticking out, but his Gid is covered up, that's the definition of a Trumtum, so obviously he doesn't have a Bris Mila either, so according to Rabbi Akiva, we should exclude him on the grounds of being an Oral. So Tosfos says, okay, you're right, that would have been according to the Chachamim, not according to Rabbi Akiva. And then Tosfos gets into this discussion that I was mentioning before about the different kinds of Oral. So now, actually, we could say that now we could even say, therefore, that the Tumtum of before, he doesn't have a Bris Mila because it's an Oynes, because we're not able to open that up and give him a Bris Mila, because it's covered up. So therefore, as long as that persists that way, then therefore he would be, again, Tosfos learned that maybe a person who's oral because his brother has died of Mila, and therefore he's not able, la halacha, to have a Bris Mila, maybe he'd be considered an Oynes, well, a Tumtum could be in the same category. So according to Rabbi Akiva, therefore an oral is not bringing Ola Sri'iyah, is not bringing his Korbanos, and is not appearing in the Bais HaMikdash. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Tomei Potter min Ri'iyah, a person's Tomei is Potter from Ri'iyah, Dichtiv, as we just said, about Uvasa Shama Vavesim Shama, you should come over there to the Bais HaMikdash, and you should bring your Korbanos, which means, as we said, Koshi Yeshna Bebiya Yeshna Bahava, anybody who's able to come into the Azara has to bring his Korbanos, V'chosha Eini Bebiya Eini Bahava, anybody who can't come into the Bais HaMikdash, namely because he's Tomei, does not have to bring his Korbanos. Rabbi Yechanan ben Dehavai Omer, And Rabbi Yochanan ben Dahavai says, which we learned Dachan Beis Aman Aleph, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Suma Ba'achas Me'ena, Potter Min Ra'iya, a person who is blind in one eye is Potter from Ra'iya, Shinema Yireh Yeroa, as we said over there with the Drosha, that it says in the Pasuk Yeroa, and we could read it Yireh, and we had Rashi and Tosfos arguing what the order of the words is. Is it Yireh Yeroa or Yeroa Yireh? Anyway, we said, Kederach Shabal Lirois Kach Bal Lirois, just as he comes to see and the Shechina, so he comes to be seen, or we said, again, there were different ways of learning that exactly. It can mean the same way as he comes for Hashem to see him, the same way he comes to see, the same way he comes for him to see Hashem, whatever. Ma baldiris, b'shtei enav, so just like when he comes to see, he's seen by Hashem with both eyes, af leirois, b'shtei enav, the same way to be seen, he has to be seen with both eyes, and therefore if he's missing one eye, then he's potter. As we talked about in some detail on Beis Namarava. So now the Gemara is going to bring some Agadah on this, and then the Gemara is going to digress into a long piece of Agadah that's going to take us all the way to all the way until the bottom of Hey Omid Beis. So the Gemara starts off. Rav Huna ki moti lahai kro yira yeroe bochi. When Rav Huna would learn this pasuk of yira, which was saying of yeroe, which was saying can be darish in yira about appearing about showing yourself in the Azara and being shown the Shechina, bochi he would cry. Omar, he would say, look at this, Eved Sherabim Etzaphim Eloroi. So how could it be that an Eved, who his master loved him so much, that he really was looking forward to see him, that Hashem is saying, Yeroa, I want you to be seen in the Azara, and Yira, that you should be able to see the Shechina, Yisrachet Menu. How could it be that such an Eved, how did it happen that such an Eved became so distanced that now his master doesn't like him and wants him to stay away? Dichtivas, we have the pasuk that we quoted at the top of the Amud, Kisa Boyu Leirois Ponai, where the Navi criticizes the Jewish people, and he says, when you come to appear in my presence, Midikash Zos Miyedchem Ramos Chatzerai, who asked you to trample my courtyards? So in other words, Hashem is saying, now that you're doing Averis, I don't want to see you in my business. So that brought Rav Huna to tears, thinking how we had such a close relationship with Hashem, and Hashem is looking forward to seeing us in the Mishmikash 3 times a year, and now we spoiled it with our Avedas, and now Hashem is saying, I don't want to see you anymore. Marsha points out, the word miyedchem hints at, we learned a few times already, we learned in Tainis, we learned in Sukkah, and in Murid Cotton, we talk about Kida means bowing on the ground in such a way where you're bowing and you're supporting your body on your thumbs and then you lift yourself back up. So in other words, that's the kind of bowing that involves hands and feet. Which is why the Pasuk uses the word over here, miyedchem. In other words, Hashem is saying, I don't want you, I don't need you to appear in the Azara if you're going to be full of Averis, and I don't need you to be doing Kida, where there you're using both your hands and feet to go on the floor in my Azara if you're not going to be listening to me anyway. So now we're saying Rav Huna would cry when he reached that Pasuk, realizing how far we've fallen. Similarly, Rav Huna ki moti la'ai krabahi, another pasuk Rav Huna would also cry about when he was learning. A pasuk says, "V'zavachta shlomim ve'achalta sham." Hashem says that the original context is by how grisim and how evil, by the brachos of flawless over there, but it applies in general. That Hashem says you should offer shlomim and you should eat them over there. So Rav Huna would say, "Eved shirabim etzapa lechal ashulchanai." Again, you have an Eved who's so dear to his master that his master is looking forward to having him eat by his table rather than usually most slaves you would just have. You'll give them their food wherever they are. But here you have one who his master loves so much that he wants him dafka to eat by his table. And again, he's srachet menu. How did it become that we're so distanced from him? And Hashem says, I don't want you. You have a different pasuk. We're also in the same chapter in Yeshaya. Lomali roiv zivchechem yomer Hashem. Hashem says, what do I need all your kobanas for? So again, look how far we've fallen, that our Averis ruined that close relationship that we had with Hashem. So now the Gemara continues with other Amoraim who cried over Pesukim that really moved them in like that. Rabbi Lazar, ki moti lahai krabahi. Rabbi Lazar would cry when he reached the following pasuk. You have when Yosef tells his brothers who he is in Parashas Vayigash. So he tells them, Ani Yosef ha'oidavichai. And the pasuk continues, v'lo yochel echav la'anesoisoi. His brothers couldn't answer him. Ki nivhalu mipono, because they were frightened, they were startled in his presence. So Rabbi Lazar would cry over that. He would say, "Ma teichachas abasa v'damkach." Madach, when a human being gave them Teuchacha, and he didn't really, he hadn't yet told them any Teuchacha. All he told them was, Ani Yosef Ha'oid Avichai. But there's an implicit Teuchacha in it. The Rashi actually says Teuchacha doesn't necessarily mean Musar, as in telling them explicitly what they did wrong. It just means Shemechiach Pishei Befonav. He demonstrates to them what they had done wrong. Just saying the words, Ani Yosef, is enough itself already for them to all of a sudden realize with such a shattering realization how wrong they had been all those years. And they were so stunned by that they couldn't speak. So he says, Teuchacha Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so when Hashem is going to put in front of a person what he did and what he should have done, how much more so that a person is going to be too frightened and too startled to be able to say anything. Because now it's all going to come home to him what he really did. So Tosfos points out, now there are individual things that a person might have a limud zchus on himself for, but we're talking overall. In other words, there's going to be, Hashem is going to show a person what you could have been and what you could have done, and it's going to stun the person into silence that he couldn't, that he's not going to have an overall answer for all of it. There is, by the way, a verse they say that there is an implicit teuchacha in when he says ha'od avichai. He's saying, is my father really alive? Then how is it that you weren't concerned all this time? You've been so concerned about Binyamin, what's going to happen? He finds out that Binyamin doesn't come home. He's going to die of grief. Why weren't you concerned? The same way all those years ago when you sold me. So there is sort of an implicit teuchacha in there. There is in that connection a verse from the Chofetz Chaim that says that takes a different tack on it. All this time, the brothers have been wondering, what's going on? Why are we being treated this way? Why is this viceroy putting our money in our sacks and framing Binyamin and so on and so forth? And they don't understand anything. And then he says the two words, Ani Yosef, and all of a sudden all the questions fall away and they all understand how everything falls into place. So the Chofetz Chaim says, in a similar vein, when the Geula Amitis Vashlema comes, and Hashem appears and says, Ani Hashem, the same way, all the questions that we had, everything that we were wondering, why did everything have to be the way it was in Golos, all of a sudden, all those questions will fall away, and we'll understand once and for all why Hashem did all the things that he did, and why we went through all the things that we did. Anyway, so we're saying, Rebbe Lazar, when he had that realization, would cry over that, realizing how the person going to defend himself against when Hashem shows him what he could have been and what he could have done, he's not going to be able to. Another one, Rabbi Lazar ki mati lahai krab bachi. Another one, Rabbi Lazar would cry when he reached the following pasuk. You have the story where Shaul goes to, where Shaul is about to fight against the Plishtim. He's not getting any answers the usual ways with the Urim V'Tumim or Nevi'im and so forth. So he goes to an Eishes Balas Oiv, a woman who practices Oiv magic, and asks her to bring up the spirit of Shmuel. And so the pasuk says, by Yom Shmuel or Shaul, Lama Hugatani Lahalas Oisi, Shmuel, it's Shmuel's spirit, his neshama, says to Shaul, why did you make me tremble and bring me up? So what do you mean tremble? So Rabbi Lazar says, Ma Shmuel Atzadikoy Mestiyadim and Adin, Madach Shmuel, the great tzadik, was afraid of Hashem's judgment. He thought, when he's being called from Gan Eden, he thought he's being called to be judged by Hashem, and he was afraid, and he uses on the word Hirgaztani, that you made me tremble. So Onu Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so we should be afraid of Hashem's judgment. So the Gemara says, Shmuel Ma'i, where do we see that Shmuel was fearful? So Dichtiv, that you have a couple of sukkim earlier, it says, Vatoma her Ishael Shol, the woman said to Shol, Elikim Ra'isi Olim, I have seen Elikim, that they are coming up. Now Elikim, often we know, doesn't always mean Hashem. Elikim often means powerful one. In this case, it means tzadikim. But she says the word Olim, so Olim ta'tre mashma. So the word Olim implies two. So but Shmuel, but Shol, that only asked her to bring up Shmuel. So who is the other one? So Chad Shmuel, so one of them is Shmuel. The Idach, now what's the other one doing over there? Is the Ozel Shmuel Va'asya L'Moshe Ba'adeh. Shmuel went and brought Moshe to come along with him. Again, Shmuel, he hears his name being called. He thinks he's being called in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, that maybe they found some Aveira or something that he had done. So he brought Moshe as a character witness. Amalei, he says to Moshe, Duma Chas V'Shalom Medina Misbeina, maybe Chas V'Shalom I'm being called in front of the Beis Din Shamayla to be judged for some Aveira that I didn't know about. Kum Bahadoi, or is that I'm being accused of some Aveira. Kum Bahadoi, so he asked Moshe, come with me. Deleka and tell them Deleka Milsa Dichsabta Ba'araita Delekiyamde and tell them that there's not a single thing that you Moshe Rabbeinu wrote in the Torah that I did not fulfill. So that's why when the Eishes Balas Oiv saw them, she saw that there were two of them because it wasn't just Shmuel, it was also Moshe Rabbeinu. Tosfos points out that it's not that Moshe could actually say that Shmuel had kept all the mitzvahs. After all, how would he know? Shmuel lived a few hundred years after him. It means Shmuel is telling him, throughout my life, I darshan psukim and darshan and darshan dinim and followed those drushes in knowing what to practically do. You come and give eders that all those drushes of mine were correct, and therefore that all the mitzvahs that I did based on them were really correct. Masha says you don't really need that. There's actually, the Gemara discusses in Brachas and says that the Mesim do know what's going on in the world, so therefore we can say that Moshe Rabbeinu knows knew what's going on throughout Shmuel's life, and he would actually know what Shmuel did and didn't do, and he could actually be a character witness on him. So the point is, Masha says, in other words, the fact that it says he was Gaztani implies that he was fearful, but what was he fearful of? This other Kim Ra'isi, Ola Minaret, clarifies that he was afraid he's being brought in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, and therefore he needed Moshe as a clerical witness. So Rabbi Elazar would cry about that, and he's saying, if even Shmuel was afraid of Hashem's judgment, and then he needed Moshe Rabbeinu to vouch for him, how much more so we should be afraid? Other examples of Chachamim who would cry when they reached a certain pasuk and thought of the implications of it. Rav Ami ki moti lahai krob bachi. When Rav Ami would reach the following pasuk, he would cry. The pasuk says, Yitin ba'ofer piu in Eicha. It says, let him place his mouth in the dust. In other words, like a yid in Golos has to completely humble himself in front of whatever goyim are ruling over him and even bow down and his mouth touches the dirt. Ulai yesh tikva. Perhaps there is hope. So he would cry, oh my, kulai hai, look at that, a yid has to be so degraded, but ulai, and it's only maybe Hashem will have rahmanus and then save him from the situation. Similarly, Rav Ami ki moti lahai kra, bachi, also the same Rav Ami, would also cry when he reached another pasuk that expresses the same idea. Bakshu tzedek bakshu anava, the Navi says to the Jewish people, there's a churban and a golos coming unless you do tshuva. He says, seek out tzedek, seek out righteousness, seek out another humility. Ulai tisosru b'yom af Hashem. Perhaps you will be protected on the day of Hashem's anger. So also, he would cry, and he would say, kula hai v'ulai. So you're telling me a person has to look for tzedek and another high levels in avoda, and still it's only maybe he'll be saved. And Rav Asi ki moti lahai kro bochi. And similarly, Rav Asi would cry when he reached a similar pasuk with a similar implication. A different Navi almost says, sin urav ehavu tov. He tells the people, hate evil and love goodness, batsigu basharam mishpat, and establish justice in the gate, which is where usually the batei dinim sat. Ulai yechnan Hashem elokei tzvakos. Maybe Hashem elokei tzvakos will have rachmanus. And again, he would say, kula hai v'ulai, all that, we're telling me you have to do mishpat, you have to sinu rav ebu toiv, and apsigu v'sham mishpat, which includes all the different great levels of avoida, and even that is only ulai, maybe you'll be saved. So he would cry over the implication of that. We actually have one of the slichas that we say during the days before Rosh Hashanah expresses the same theme as well. You have one of the slichas over there being Malachi Rachman, Mishor Se Elyon, and we say over and over in them Ulai Yochis Am Oni Ve'Elyon Ulai Yirachem She'eris Yosef and so forth, expressing the same idea that no matter how much a person does, Hashem has his chashbonus and Hashem has his ways of running the world, and not necessarily are we guaranteed that we're going to come out with a favorable judgment. So Rav Asi over here was saying would cry over the implications of that, realizing that no matter what, a person does everything that they're supposed to, and still we don't understand how Hashem runs the world, and sometimes you have Rosh of the Tovloi and Tzadik Radaloi and various other things like that. Which actually will continue in the Gemara tomorrow. So we're going to continue with another example of one of the Chachamim crying over such a thing, and we're actually going to talk more about that idea of how we see. Sometimes it seems that there are people who get what they don't on the face of it they don't seem to deserve. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Beis Hashem.